Well, hello, everyone. Welcome again to the White House. My name is Macon Phillips, and I'm joined today by Nancy Underparl, who's had quite a busy week and was able to find a few minutes today to take questions that we've received through the website and that we're getting through Facebook. If you are watching this somewhere else on the web, you can definitely join the discussion by going to whitehouse.gov/live. And before we start asking answering questions, Nancy, the president posted a proposal to the White House website on Monday, and we have a big event tomorrow. Can you tell folks a little bit about what's going on this week?
Sure. Well, it's an exciting and very busy week here at the White House. The president has been fighting for the last year to get health reform enacted that will lower costs for all Americans and get everybody covered. And this is the next step in that process, which is that we've passed bills now in the House and Senate that meet the president's principles. And he's called everyone here to the White House, to Blair House across the street, to have a bipartisan meeting and discuss the issues. How do we control costs? How do we keep insurance companies from unfair practices? You know, what do we do to address this problem? And let's try to roll up our sleeves and finally get the job done. So it's very exciting. As you said, we posted the president's proposal on Monday. We're looking forward to discussing that with some people today and with leadership tomorrow who are coming to roll up their sleeves. And we hope the Republicans will put their plan up as well.
Great. Well, when we posted the president's proposal, we also had a forum where people could submit questions as they were reading through it, and we have a few. One that's a fairly basic question: will there be free insurance for those who cannot afford it?
Well, it won't be free, but the president believes that all working men and women and all Americans should have access to affordable coverage. So under our proposal, there will be exchanges where people who are uninsured can get coverage. It won't be free if you're extremely poor in this country. There is Medicaid, and for some people, they'll be eligible for Medicaid, but even that has some copays. So it won't be free, but it will be vastly less expensive than it is today, both because of the competition in the new marketplace that will help drive costs down and because of the tax credits that people will receive to help them afford coverage.
Okay. Our next question, beyond the exchange marketplace, what measures will be enacted to promote and increase competition between health insurers, especially since many states have few competing insurers to begin with?
Wow, is that ever the case? You know, just yesterday, the American Medical Association put out a new report on the concentration of insurance companies in the market. And I just looked through it, in fact, and it's really shocking how many markets there are where there are two insurance companies and they have 70% of the market. That's not the kind of competition that we need to help bring down costs and give consumers the kind of protections and insurance that they need. So you're right, but I will talk about other things in the exchange, but I do want to mention the exchange because it's so important. It gives people, individuals and small businesses, the ability to buy coverage in the way that a large employer or the federal government would today, by pooling people together. That way, if you're a small business and you have someone who's older or sicker, they don't drive up the cost for everyone. You're in a larger pool and they can spread the risk. So the exchange is really huge, and it will really, we believe it will reduce costs. And in fact, the independent scorekeeper for all this, the Congressional Budget Office, says it will reduce costs in the individual market by as much as 14% to 20%. So that really will add to the competition. It'll make it easier for insurance companies to come in and compete against each other. So we do believe there will be more choices, and the independent people who have looked at this agree with that. And furthermore, there will be some other rules of the road that all the insurance companies will have to follow, and we think that'll help promote competition. For example, right now, in a lot of these markets, there's nothing really to protect consumers when an insurance company comes in and wants to raise rates unreasonably. We've seen this in California just recently, and the outcry, I think, is what helped. The fact that insurance reform was going on here in Washington is what helped out there, the insurance commissioners say, no, hold on, you're not going to do that right now. But in California, the insurance commissioner doesn't have any ability to review rates. So that's an authority that will be part of this new bill so that someone could review rates. The secretary could help review rates if a state doesn't want to do it. Right. So we think those things will all add to competition.
Great. So as you've been answering, there's a chat going on at Facebook. Ralph Tolikin, hope I pronounced that correctly, asked the question, anyone able to tell me how the bill would affect medical advantage plans. Maybe he means Medicare Advantage plans.
That's right. That's right. Well, Medicare Advantage plans are essentially private plans that are supposed to provide the same benefits that Medicare, the guaranteed Medicare benefits that Medicare covers by law. They have been paid over the past 10 years an average of 14% more than it costs to provide those services for fee-for-service. So they're getting quite a bit of a premium over the regular providers in fee-for-service. And they use that premium for things like extra benefits that aren't covered by Medicare, which is nice for the people that get them. But they also use it to for their own profits for the things that they do as an insurance company. So it won't be surprising to you to know that that's a pretty good line of business for a lot of big insurance companies. Under the president's plan, and he's been talking about this piece of this since last February, he's proposing to gradually phase down the payments to those plans so that they're getting a payment that's closer to what the fee-for-service plans, fee-for-service Medicare gets. Right now, the average couple who is not in Medicare Advantage, and by the way, the vast majority of Medicare beneficiaries aren't in that plan, so the average couple who's not in it is subsidizing by almost $100 a year the ones who are, and the taxpayers are subsidizing them too. So the president doesn't think that's fair. He wants everybody to get guaranteed Medicare benefits. And some of that money, frankly, is being used to help fund filling the donut hole for seniors. Right now, seniors who get prescription drugs, which is wonderful, they depend on them, but when they get up to about $2,600 in spending, it's done. And until they go over $4,500, they don't have any help, and they're up out there on their own. There's about 8 million seniors a year who get in that donut hole, and they don't have any help. And so what the president wants to do is fill the donut hole, and ratcheting down the unfair and unwarranted subsidies to Medicare Advantage plans are part of the way that he does that.
Okay. One of the questions that we got through the website when we posted the president's proposal had to do with the Cadillac tax. We've heard a lot about that in the news. Ask the question, how can I tell if my insurance is a Cadillac plan that will be taxed and potentially taken away? Can you sort of talk a little bit about this issue?
And Macon, I think the easiest way to think about this, my two boys are huge car fanatics, and they know every car that's out there on the road. And the tax, the excise tax on high-cost plans is no longer a Cadillac tax in the president's proposal. It's a Bentley tax. And by that I mean that it has been raised for everyone, and it doesn't start until 2018. So in 2018, if you have a plan that for a family costs more than $27,500 a year, and let me just say that for those of us who are federal employees, our average plan for a family here is around $13,000 or so. So that's a pretty expensive plan, even if you account for some inflation. So if you have a plan like that, to the person who asked this, then above that level, you'll be paying a tax. And what we hope to do in the meantime is by our discussion about this, and obviously it's getting out there in the bloodstream, is to say, is this really what we want? Do we really want to be spending so much money on health insurance plans? Wouldn't you rather, if you have that kind of plan, and I think very few people do, we know that Goldman Sachs executives have some that are about that level or a little higher. If you have that kind of plan, wouldn't you rather have that money in your wages? Wouldn't you rather be taking home a salary that's higher than spending it on health care? So we want everybody to have affordable, quality coverage, but we don't want to be spending more on health care than every other country and getting less for it, which is the situation that the president is trying to address.
Okay. Our next question says, I have insurance. Will my taxes increase to pay for other people? So all this goes through, what happens with taxes?
Well, if you have insurance and you like your plan, nothing should change about that. If you're a very high income person in this country making more than $200,000 in unearned income, meaning from dividends and those kinds of things, then you could pay a slightly higher, you could pay hospital insurance tax, which you may not have been paying in the past. So for very high income people, there could be an additional tax that you'll be paying. Some of that will go back to helping to cover everyone. And it helps you too, by the way, because if you have insurance, your costs have been going up every year. And one of the reasons is there are people who don't have insurance and you're paying a hidden tax on their behalf. So with these funds that we're raising here, we will help to cover everybody. And it helps people who have insurance as well as those who don't, because the ones who have insurance are paying extra to help cover the emergency room stays and the other things that people have when they don't have insurance.
Okay. And we got another question through the Facebook chat from Izzy Momblog. I don't think that's a real name, but we'll just go with that. Izzy Momblog, who asks, what about the middle class? We pay a fortune for insurance every month that we can barely afford, but we are not poverty stricken. Will reform help the middle class?
Yes, it will. And that's something the president feels very strongly about. He has said all along that the reason why, 40-something million people don't have insurance isn't that they don't want it, it's that they can't afford it. So by creating this, the exchanges or marketplaces, and by providing tax credits for people who are working hard but just can't afford it or having trouble or struggling like Momblog is trying to afford it, that will help them to be able to afford insurance. And so it will help over time also as everyone gets covered. We can reform the insurance markets, and we can bring down the cost for everybody, and that's what the president wants to do.
Okay. Our next question, again, came through the website at whitehouse.gov, where we posted the proposal. I work for a small business who does not offer health care, but my husband is able to carry me on his insurance through his work. How will this be affected?
It shouldn't be. If your small business can't afford health care, and your husband wants to continue carrying you on his insurance, that will be fine. Nothing will change. But I will say this. Small businesses should be among the biggest beneficiaries of this bill. We know that most of the people who are uninsured, Macon, are working people, and they work for small businesses. And small businesses are struggling. In fact, one of the last web chats I did was with small business people who are just struggling to provide it. So maybe her employer, when this bill passes, we'll get some of the tax credits. We think about 60% of small businesses will get tax credits. They won't have any new employer responsibilities. They're not required to offer insurance, but we think that will incentivize them to do it when they get these $40 billion in tax credits, and will help them to be able to afford to offer insurance to people. And also it'll be less expensive, because one of the reasons it's so expensive for them now is, as a small business, you have fewer than 50 employees. When you go out in the market to try to buy it, the insurance companies price it pretty high because they're not sure what they're getting into here. So when we have a bigger exchange, a marketplace where people can pool their risk, they're gonna get a better deal.
Okay. The next question came from Bruce Blodgett, again, through the Facebook chat. It's an issue that we hear a lot about. Why not allow insurance companies to compete across state lines?
We are doing that. We are doing that. This bill allows insurance companies to compete across state lines. But it does say, there have to be some minimum standards here. Some people, when they talk about this, they just want it to be opened up in the wild, wild west. But in fact, insurance companies, this market needs a little regulation. That's why we're having to have this debate right now. That's why things are happening like in California with insurance companies raising rates, by as much as 39%, because the California commissioner doesn't really have any ability to do anything about it. So you need to make sure people are protected against fly-by-night companies that might not have meet solvency standards. You need to make sure there are basic consumer protections in place. And so what we've said is states that want to band together. So if I'm from Tennessee, if Tennessee and Georgia want to say, any insurance company that's licensed in Georgia can sell in Tennessee, and they don't have to meet our standards in Tennessee and vice versa, we're going to make that much easier to do. Governor Pawlenty from Minnesota last week was here, and he says that works really well. They have a compact like that. A regional compact is what we call it in the life insurance area, and that's worked well to help drive down costs and get some more competition into states. So we're all for that.
Okay. Here's a basic question I think a lot of people have. This one came through our website again. Where will you get the money for health reform? So how does it all work from a funding perspective?
Well, we get it from several sources. The things that we're spending money on are more coverage for people through tax credits, so giving them subsidies to get affordable health insurance. That's essentially the biggest thing we spend money on. And then some additional benefits in Medicare, like I said, closing the donut hole for seniors for prescription drugs, and some community health centers and things like that. So that's where the spending goes. The funding for these things comes from, in Medicare, driving down the unwarranted subsidies that we talked about earlier that go to Medicare Advantage plans. That's one big source of funding. Also, some other Medicare changes around making sure that hospitals reduce unnecessary readmissions. It turns out that a lot of people who go to the hospital and Medicare patients get readmitted within 30 days just because they maybe didn't get the right kind of care the first time. So there are incentives for hospitals to provide better care, and that can reduce Medicare spending. So we get some of the savings from that. Some of it comes from administrative simplification, almost $20 billion over 10 years from just reducing the number of forms people fill out, the paperwork, increasing health information technology. That's some of the savings. And then there are some savings in increased revenues. One of them is the so-called Cadillac plan, the excise tax on high-cost plans. So we get some revenue from that. We get some revenue from increasing slightly the hospital insurance tax on people who make above $200,000, individual, $250,000 a couple, and on unearned income. So that's the other sources.
Okay. And then to sort of take that, I think some of the stuff you just talked about, from a different perspective, while you were answering that question, Benjamin Hafner asked, how much will the average person have to pay for this? Will it increase or decrease costs that are already out there? So what does this mean to the regular person?
Well, it will decrease costs that are already out there. And we don't have a full, when you put a bill up in front of Congress, the Congressional Budget Office looks at it and decides how much it costs and where the costs will fall. That hasn't happened yet on our full bill, although it has happened on the underlying Senate bill. And on that one, the Congressional Budget Office said that in the individual market, so people right now who are getting their insurance that way, it'll save about 14 to 20%. In the small group market, I believe it was something like 5 to 8%, so quite a bit of savings for those people. The Business Roundtable put out a study of the Senate bill saying that it would reduce what large employers are paying in insurance by $3,000 per employee when it's fully phased in. And the reason they said that was because they see a lot of changes in the way healthcare is delivered to get down some of the waste and abuse and to simplify it. So they see a lot of savings. They see a lot of savings from that. So I can't give you exact premium numbers because I'm not the actuary, but I can tell you that the underlying bill that this is based on, the premiums are much more affordable.
Great. Well, so this is going to have to be our last question. I know you have a really busy day getting ready for tomorrow, and I should remind everyone that you'll be able to watch the entire meeting live streamed on whitehouse.gov. So make sure you come back tomorrow. It starts at 10 a.m.?
That's right, 10.
Okay, so tune in then. And let's finish it up with a question we got from Stephanie Parkinson, who asks, will insurance companies be able to deny for pre-existing conditions and or raise rates for chronically ill or pre-existing conditions so it is cost prohibitive?
That's the easiest question I've gotten, and it's wonderful. No. That's one of the things the president really, really, really wants to accomplish. And, you know, this is something that you can't just take. Everyone says, oh, let's just do this or let's just do this small piece. The problem is, in order to really do the important reforms like the one Stephanie just talked about, so that people who have pre-existing conditions who right now often can't get insurance, we have to get everyone covered so that the markets work and people with pre-existing conditions can get coverage at an affordable rate. And that's a big part of what this is all about.
Great. Well, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you taking the time. And appreciate everybody joining us at whitehouse.gov. Again, tune in tomorrow at 10 a.m. For the summit or from the meeting here at the White House. And we look forward to seeing you then. Have a good day.